This episode is brought to you by FinditNWA.com, your hyper-local business directory connecting you with the best of Northwest Arkansas. Whether you're looking for a new place to eat, a trusted service provider, or unique local shops, FinditNWA has you covered. We also highlight businesses with a featured listing on the site. That means if you're a small business owner in NWA, you could be next. Discover more at FinditNWA.com.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey, folks, and welcome to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and I'm excited to be with you today. I've got a great episode with another great entrepreneur right here in Northwest Arkansas. That entrepreneur is Stephen Vandermeer. He is the founder of iHaul. They are an amazing construction firm that is doing some incredible work here in Northwest Arkansas, moving dirt and everything else in between. And we're going to hear his story today on the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Stephen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful, Randy. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Stephen, your journey, and we had a chance to talk about this before this particular episode, your journey from Cape Town to Prairie Grove is remarkable. How did those early farming and equipment experiences influence the way you run iHaul today?
Yeah, it's been an incredible journey. For sure, there's a lot of highlights. You know, you look at the view right now and you think you enjoy the view, but you got to remember the hardship and the challenges you had to deal with to get to where you are today. I'm very grateful for my early farming experience. Born and raised, grew up on a farm in South Africa. I came over to the States in 2014, worked on an H-2A work visa for a few years on the farms in Northeast Arkansas, mostly did rice and soybeans and corn. And I always go back to, you know, basically where my roots came from, and that's farming. We were taught from a young age, hard work combined with faith and a lot of patience in farming taught me what I know today and has brought me to where I am today. We never gave up. Going back to South Africa, I played a lot of sports, a lot of individual sports and team sports. Individual sports helped me a lot build my confidence, but also dealing with, you know, if there was something with the letdowns, if there was a mistake or I didn't play well, it was mine. It was mine to own. It's mine to better. And then also playing in a team format, that's why I always go back to how important it is for kids to play in sports or be involved in some type of a team formation to learn these qualities, because somewhere in life, you're going to either use your individual qualities or you have to bring that in to be part of a team. On the farming in Northeast Arkansas, it taught me a lot about, well, first of all, America. I had the great pleasure of working on incredible farms where we were working 90 to 110 hours a week on the crops. Yeah, a lot of people don't understand what goes into farming. It will humble you very quick when it comes to work and to hard work. The way I run iHaul is based upon all those qualities that I learned through my time in South Africa, my time in the States, and combining those two, I think, has given me the opportunity to form something incredible like iHaul. So yeah, that's basically on those qualities, on both best of both worlds, to combine them.
Yeah, I want to unpack this a little bit. I do want to go back. When you were living and growing up in Cape Town, did you ever, like, was America like a place that you aspired to go to? Or, I mean, you know what I'm saying? In terms of like just your origin story, was that something that you were like, that's where I want to eventually go? Because I think you brought a lot of the foundational tools and skills that you had from South Africa. So like hard work translates in any economy, in any location. But I mean, you brought farming knowledge, you brought a lot of things here to the U.S. Was the U.S. like the only place you were considering going, or how did that work out?
To be honest with you, it was never a thought of going abroad. But us, our culture is the next generation takes over the farm. That's kind of how that became. There was a whole story before that, you know, professional rugby, a lot of injuries led to, well, I've got to go do something. It's either time for me to go back, join my dad on the farm and take over the farm. At that time, he weren't in a state or he weren't ready to hand over yet. So what typically happens is the next generation farmer comes to the States on a H-2A work visa, gain, you know, first world knowledge on technology on farming, and then be able to take it back home. So we decided that was the next step. And 2 years later in America, that's when I met my wife, Brittany. And I've never looked back, to be honest with you.
I love that. And she's from Arkansas, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's awesome. I love that. So iHaul started with just a trailer and hauling debris. What was the moment that you realized that this was actually going to become more than just a side hustle, right? Because it sounds like when you started it, you were like, yeah, you know, I could probably make some extra money here or there. And I think anybody can relate to that because we're all looking to add some more money at the end of the month. But at what point did you start doing this with a trailer and just hauling debris where you were like, you know what, I could actually make this into something?
It wasn't really a moment where I realized it. It was a moment of, I don't have another choice. I have to make this work. And I put all my faith in Christ. And I was lucky enough to be connected or surround myself with incredible people that not just that gave me work, but that motivated me to retire. You know, there was, you know, I owned my own chicken and poultry farm up in Northwest Arkansas. And I felt like I was limited to what God wanted for me. And when this door opened, I never looked back to, oh, this may work out. I made it to where I don't have a choice to make it work. And I basically put all my eggs in one basket. You know, we grow up and we were taught, do not do that. But I don't have a choice. I went in with, I don't have anything to lose. And if I lose, then on to the next project or on to the next adventure. I had friends that I reached out to, particularly basically one friend that I reached out to, and he had a tree business. And he would give me, he just happened to call me and said, hey man, I took some trees out. I need a yard fixed. You know, these people need their backyard graded back out. And without hesitation, I went and bought a skid steer because I never looked at the risk. I just went for it. And a backyard turned into, you know, doing their backyard, building their patio, building their flagstone patio, doing their flower beds. And friends moved and bought a property. It was like, you know, can you come clean or clear our trees out, build us a driveway? And it was just, I never said no. And I always chased whatever was available to further myself. And I did 38 week long jobs in a year. So I did 38 jobs in 52 weeks, basically. And in between all of those, I did, you know, odd things here and there. But I know my pastor, he was one of my very first clients that he ordered a load of mulch. And I mean, you make $200, $200 is $200.
Exactly. I love that story, you know, and it's so funny. I spend in my spare time, I spend some time on YouTube, and I've watched videos of people clearing debris or grading land, if you will. And you know, obviously we're in the South. So here, and whether you're in Northwest Arkansas or anywhere else, there's always going to be land that needs to be improved upon. And you kind of found a way where you were able to kind of take the best of both worlds when it comes to clearing land, but also giving people improving that land, right? Because it's one thing to just clear it. It's a whole nother thing to improve it. And you've kind of found kind of that happy space in between where you get to do both.
Yeah. You know, you normally say when you're a kid, you know, I like playing in my sandbox. Well, my sandbox, I'm still playing in the sandbox. It just got a whole lot bigger. And then back to the farming side too. Now I still do what I loved about farming is the dirt, taking the dirt, transforming something where hundreds and thousands of people are impacted by it in a positive way. You know, you create new businesses, you still play, you still have the equipment side of stuff. So that never left. That's what I loved about farming, was always on the equipment. You still water. I find a very calming sense in water that I love. And I've always loved water. I understand how water flows. And when you can figure out how water flows and works with dirt, you have something special.
Yeah, it certainly is a good combination. And, you know, I told you this in our previous call, I've worked with design professionals, engineers, and architects for more than almost, I hate to date myself, but almost three decades. And I was always amazed at what the talent and skill set that they bring to the built environment, right? And you bring, Stephen, as well as you as iHall, bring that talent and skill set to the built environment, where you kind of take nothing and create something out of it, right? Because the raw land is sometimes when people, it's hard to have a vision for what something can be when you're just looking at raw land. But I would imagine that you have a gift where you're able to see the potential of ultimately what it can be. And when you start to rein in dirt, when you start to figure out water, which are two of the major aspects of any land development project, it definitely makes a huge difference.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't, people see a building or a road and they don't realize what's underneath that. What had to the planning, you know, years and years, you look at a project, a mid-sized project. Well, it may have taken 2 years to plan this project through the engineers, through budget, through the city, to get everything just perfect to where it, you can take that raw land and make it and turn it into something unique.
Yeah. You know, I have a friend that's a civil site developer, and you'll appreciate this, but one day he was pointing out to his wife as he was driving down the road, what, you know, ostensibly to the average person might look like a ditch, but it was actually a culvert. And he was explaining to her the value of having something like that on the side of the road, right? And it's like, we can't appreciate these things on a daily basis because we don't recognize, in a lot of instances, you know, how much of a difference it makes for us. So, you know, I always tell that story because I think it's really funny, but you know what a culvert is, but the average person doesn't. They think it, oh, well, that's just a ditch, or that's just what that is. And so it does make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So listen, one of your promises that you came up with is, as you started hauling debris, you had a trailer. One of the things that you figured out early on was, you know what, I'm going to make sure my word is my bond. I'm never going to miss a deadline. In an industry, okay, mind you, in the construction industry where delays are common, how do you make that happen at iHaul?
Extreme amount of planning ahead. So we, you know, it's not just about dropping equipment and going. There's a lot. After a project is approved and awarded, from there on with us to make it happen with either a GC or an owner, there's a lot of strategic planning that go in, especially in our office as well, on from a computer perspective out to the field to then go and complete the job site. For how long we had an estimate on doing this project for, with what equipment, the crew, how many guys are in that crew. There's a lot of equipment, a lot of planning, and obviously weather plays a big part in it too. As you know, wintertime, springtime is not very favorable for a site contractor. So summertime, it's 200 miles an hour every day. You're trying to push doing a year's work into 7 months, basically. So in order to do that, we have to prep way ahead of time. So missing a deadline is also utilizing technology. I know in our first meeting, we talked about technology as well, and having the right people to manage those and having really good crews in the field to complete those tasks is something that we have always focused on since the beginning. Deadline wise, obviously a deadline is extremely important for GCs, for owners. If a project can finish sooner than what it was expected, it means extra money in that owner's pocket. They can open the doors sooner. Revenue can start coming in. Where we are always asked on a standpoint of, on a deadline, when do we think we'll be done with our work? We always give almost an impossible deadline to challenge ourselves with either putting more equipment. We always go back to we have the iron to throw on a project to knock it out and move on. Even if we rained out for a long period of winter, springtime, we will double up on projects to stay ahead of our deadline to keep the ball rolling. So I think we make it a big point in our company to see every deadline through and to make that deadline and never miss a deadline.
Yeah. I mean, I think that approach is commonplace. Well, not commonplace, but I think it's the goal that most businesses have in this arena to kind of get a job done and throw as many resources at it as quickly as possible to get it, you know. And I'm always reminded of, I'm a big fan of HGTV. So whenever you see a flipper flipping a house, they try to throw every resource at that house right away to turn it over as quickly as possible so that they can ensure that they're able to sell that property, make a profit on it, and do all that good stuff. In the same way, people that own land have that same desire and hope that they can get control of whatever they need to get control of in the land, because you can't build until you've actually done the civil site development work, which is the foundation of the work that IHAL does.
Yeah, and a big point of that is it's very important in a company to have those problem solvers, right? Because you're going to have problems come up no matter in what business you are. You're going to have challenges, and you need to have the right people in place to take care of those challenges and make things happen regardless of the challenge. Because, you know, if we throw our hands up, we hit a first challenge and we're behind a month on schedule, you need somebody to solve it. You can't just say, well, sorry, I'm going to move on to the next one. You know, you've got to sign a contract. You have to make it happen.
You mentioned technology a few minutes ago. Can you kind of give us an example of some of the technology that IHAL uses that really that separates you from everybody else, and the technology that you really lean on to do what you just described in terms of getting in and getting the job done as quickly as possible to deliver it back to the owner?
So when I first started, I didn't even have technology, and we had a technology on the first machine, and it was a game changer. Now, with that being said, technology is extremely expensive, so it's not just something you can go out and buy from day one. To justify the expense in technology, you have to utilize the technology. For us, for instance, give an example on technology is, if we have an excavator digging and it does not have technology, our plans and our modules are built on what the engineers designed on a subgrade, or, you know, a 1 foot or a 5 foot underneath subgrade, to then come back with select fill. The whole, I won't go into too much detail, but to describe the technology on that excavator, might not have technology, but you might have a dozer working across on a 10 acre site across the side with technology. This excavator does not know how deep it needs to dig. Is basically they guesstimating how deep they need to dig. Now you have to bring that dozer all the way from that, the other side of the site, over to this side that has the technology, to now double check if the excavator is doing his job. So by the time frame that guy had to travel back across with that machine, burning his time, burning your fuel, just to come and double check someone's work, and then have to go back all the way, if he's pushing in dirt where trucks are coming in, now he's behind. So utilizing technology all over the site with all our machines has given us the opportunity to meet those deadlines, because everybody is responsible for their job. They're owning their job. They have the tools they need to do their job. There's no one that needs to double check everybody on their job. So you're freeing up somebody's time, or you're freeing up a piece of equipment. Or if we're putting in utilities, there's, you dig down to grade, you can come back up, you can put your bedding down, lay your pipe in. Well, with technology or without technology, it goes back to bidding a job too. We can bid a job on precise quantities. If you don't have technology, you're either going to dig that ditch deeper than what it needs to be, so you're going to have more material that you have to export that's going to cost you more. If you have technology, you're cutting it to exact grade. So what you bid is what you're exporting. Or what you bid to bring back in to fill that ditch up is exactly the same quantity. So if you count up all those things you can save on, the technology is a no-brainer. And it gives a developer or a GC the peace of mind that we have the tools necessary to complete a job. There's not going to be, we have to come back and fix something. There's no, we're not doing it right. It's always, you have technology to fall back.
And I would imagine, like in a lot of other industries, you guys are witnessing an advancement of technology at a pretty rapid pace, right? So meaning that things that you had, tools that you had in your tool belt a couple of years ago could do one thing. Now they can do something totally different. Is that kind of accurate?
Yes. I mean, our technology, I mean, it is phenomenal. I mean, you can, there's so many things you can change on the job site. There's so many, you know, not always, maybe the engineers missed something. That technology will pick it up too. If it's missed, it gives you an opportunity to basically throw out a red flag and say, hey, we might want to address this before it becomes a problem in the project. So it gives everybody enough time to be able to discuss what's ahead, and it keeps the job flowing.
Yeah.
You know, the technology that for the next 5 years will be totally different than what we see right now. I mean, we're seeing some machines are starting to drive themselves and getting autonomous.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's going to work with construction. I know the mining industry is focused on that a lot more than what the civil side is right now on commercial.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's still a while before we get into any of that, but I know for safety reasons and things like that, it's heading our way.
Yeah. Well, I think it also depends on exactly what you're doing. I've seen some stories about farmers in Iowa and other states where, you know, their tractors are GPS controlled and they literally just sit behind there and just make sure the thing doesn't run off into the street. But as long as it's following the coordinates that are set up, it's going to do exactly what it's supposed to do. So,
yeah, I mean, that's what I did on the rice farms in Northeast Arkansas. You just sit behind the wheel. You don't even touch it. I mean, you just turn and you click a button and it goes back in line. So,
yeah. Now, that's cool. So listen, you know, now that you've been here almost, you've been in Arkansas going on 11 years now, and you've been up here in Northwest Arkansas for a while. Tell me a little bit about how you are viewing like Prairie Grove specifically, because that's where you guys are out of and based, and Northwest Arkansas. All those areas are growing rapidly, right? All of Northwest Arkansas is just growing rapidly. What role do you see IHAW playing in shaping that growth? Because, I mean, it sounds like you've had your hand in a lot of major projects, probably some that people that are listening to this have either driven by or physically seen with their eyes. So what are your thoughts about just the rapid growth that we're experiencing here in Northwest Arkansas? And how do you hope to help in that process?
Yes, our growth is very rapid. You know, they're basically calling us the next Dallas. In the next 10 to 15 years, fields that you can see from the highway will be no more. As sad as that is, it's also good. It depends on how you look at it. In our role that we play as a company in the civil construction is, with rapid growth comes a lot of responsibility, and responsibility is in everybody doing their due diligence in making sure projects are done and handled the right way, where people can rely on a trustworthy contractor. So for instance, engineers, you know, I know several engineers, and I know they're swamped with work because everybody's pushing, hey, we want plans back, we want this back. There's going to be mistakes made somewhere through the process. And to have somebody to where an engineer can go, hey, IHAW, here's preliminary plans. We need a budget for it. Can y'all do a preliminary takeoff on it to ensure that we did our due diligence to hand it over to them? So utilizing us in a rapid growth environment, I think we're very well adapted to do so. And then to see the projects through, you know, we're growing. Our growth per year has been exceptional. And we don't have any hesitation that is going to stop anytime soon. So we'll go as high as the good Lord wants to take us.
I mean, you know, I talk to a lot of planners and people that are looking at the infill development here in Northwest Arkansas specifically. And one of the constants that I hear from them is that we're going to grow. So that's like inevitable. The idea is that if we can either grow smart or we can grow and we're just kind of like, you know, putting one fire out after another in terms of a lack of planning. And that's like the biggest issue. And that's why an organization like IHAL and the work that you do plays a major role in how this area gets to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. And our, you know, the cities with infrastructure, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes to make development possible. That's where we play a big role into. I mean, you take a city like Preburg, amazing city with amazing people in there, in the city, small town, but you look at the next 10 years, it's going to be triple its size right now. But the infrastructure in there has to be set in place to make that possible. So I think with strategic planning and staying ahead of the curve in these cities are extremely important. I mean, we saw up north where they had to shut down development for a period because of infrastructure problems. They had to catch up before development could continue. So yeah, there's a happy medium definitely in between the how fast we're growing in accordance with our infrastructure. Are we ready for it? The planning that went in behind it. I think so far, North West Arkansas has done a great job. We've seen some incredible, and we have incredible people, from engineers to the city, every city's planning commission, city council, the engineers in there, the mayors, they've all done an exceptional job.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I feel the same way. I just think everybody is really trying to make sure that we dot our I's and cross our T's as it comes to growth. Because you mentioned it, you know, we could become the next Dallas. Now, I will say this. There are some people that don't like hearing that, but it's almost inevitable. But my point is simply, we can become a better Dallas, yes, a better Austin, right? You know, in terms of how we grow.
And I mean, and when we see that in a small scale in smaller communities, you know, people are, you know, this is a small town feel, we don't want to grow. It's inevitable. You're going to grow. You're not going to be able to stop development. Now, making smart decisions through the city and bringing in the right developers to build the right infrastructure for these developments, absolutely. But it's going to change, whether, as much as I hate to say it, but whether you like it or not, it's coming.
Yeah, it is coming. It is coming for sure. You briefly mentioned your team, and clearly none of this would be possible because you're not a solo practitioner. You have a huge group of folks behind you that are really supporting you at IHAL. And I want to talk about this concept that you shared with me the last time we had our conversation, which is this whole idea about blue collar rising. What does that mean to you? And how do you instill that in your team culture at IHAL?
Yeah, we came up with the slogan blue collar rising. You know, we also, a lot of our posts has the blue collar grit with technology. When you look at blue collar, I mean, there's a lot of different jobs, plumbing, electric, site guys, utility guys. There are several different structures in the blue collar world. But for us personally is, I want to see the guys that help build a company and the guys that are out there in the field and the guys and the girls in the office and in the field have something to fall back and be proud of who they are. They're the backbone of this country. The amount of work they put in, the hours they put in, you know, I take our crews in the field. A lot of them are working, you know, long hours, 12-hour days. They've got, you know, they live maybe an hour away. So they're at work more than what they're at home. They've got kids at home. They're missing birthday parties. They're missing sport events because they need to provide for their family. And I want to make sure in the Blue Collar Rising slogan that we take care of those people, that they are not just taken care of in our company and succeed in our company, but also succeed outside of the company in a better life, better quality of life, whether it is while they are still at IHAL or after they retire. There's nothing for the blue collar. I know there's a few big companies that do good programs on retirement and employee ownership, and it's great. And we wanted to do something different. We wanted to show our loyalty to the guys that share loyalty to us in making sure they're taken care of, whether they drive down the road and have a tragic accident and now they don't have anything to provide for their family. We've set structures and in place to take care of that, to make sure that family is taken care of, to make sure that guy, that whether he has any problem, that he has the tools to come to any one of us in a leadership role to ask for help.
I mean, and that, I think that's really, that's hugely important. And I mean, team culture, creating an environment where people want to be there, right? Where they're not like just looking and hoping, waiting for the next opportunity. Because in reality, I would imagine that at iHall, your goal is to make sure they realize that the next opportunity is just another role within iHall and not having to go someplace else. And so in that vein of talking about opportunities and specifically recruiting and training, the next generation is really a challenge in construction. Every construction firm, every engineering firm, every architectural firm that I've ever spoken to says that their biggest issue is recruitment and retention. So they're kind of go hand in hand, right? The two things. One is I got to find new people and I got to keep the folks that I have. And so how is iHall connecting with schools and young workers to build a career path that they could really be excited about and proud of?
I mean, what you said is, I will agree with that, because not only do we have a problem with recruiting, but it's also retaining those guys. It's, which I'm still youngish too, but it's a problem where people have adapted to, if I have a challenge in my workspace, I don't have to be there. I can go somewhere else. You know, as soon as they face a problem or a challenge, they just up and leave. And, you know, they run from problems instead of facing them head on and getting it over and done with and continue to grow in a company. In the schools, what we're trying to do through social media and in our local schools is promoting and showing that, hey, blue collar is a very good career path. You know, there's a lot of kids that don't want to go to college, that don't know what to do. But when we talk about construction, there's several positions in a construction company. It don't mean you're out there in the heat laying pipe or digging ditches. There's office positions. And there's a lot of people that don't realize how well these positions pay. They pay extremely well. And how well office positions, field positions, if you stick it through and you build a career out of this in 10, 20 years, you make a lot of money.
Totally. And, you know, I always think about, and I always tell the story of my oldest son is 20, and he had a kid that graduated high school with him. And this kid, he just said, I'm not cut out for college. And he opted to go work in the trades. And now this kid is making almost six figures. You know, he's not even old enough to rent a car, but he's making six figures and he absolutely loves it. And he has no college debt. And again, this is not an indictment or to say that, you know, there's a path for everybody, right?
Yes.
And I think that specifically in our country, in the United States, we are just finally coming around to saying, hey, you can embrace this path. You can go the trades route. There is something noble in that as well, like building things. I think I always tell design professionals this, and this doesn't just extend to engineers and architects, but it's to everyone that plays a role in the built environment. You guys are responsible for something that we see, touch, and feel every single day. I mean, it's, you know, it's a full stop. You know, there's nothing else to say except that the work that you do matters, whether you're a plumber, electrician, construction management. I mean, like you said, everything that supports this industry or works inside of this industry really does matter.
Yeah. I mean, AI or robot ain't going to take my job.
No.
So no. I'm not too worried about it. The trades is what this country was built on. It's what the world. So to find a position in a trade is at a young age is, I think it's, if I can have any advice to anyone listening or someone young that don't, or no matter what your age is, if you don't know what to do, look into the trades, look into these construction firms. There's a position available for you somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, I'm
glad you mentioned that, because I've always thought about, I've got a few more gray hairs than you. I don't think you have any gray hairs yet, but they're coming. I was curious to know, what are your thoughts and or views around, you know, older people, like somebody that's hitting halftime, right? We say halftime is either 40 or 50 or somewhere around there. And with the advent of medical technologies and breakthroughs, people are going to start living to be older. But a 40-year-old that says, you know, I'm sick of doing whatever fill-in-the-blank white-collar job that I've been doing. I want to get out there and get my hands dirty. What advice would you give them about potentially getting in the trades? And what would that look like from your perspective based on what you know?
We look at things a whole lot different too, is we embrace no matter what age you are, because we feel like if you have a mixture of older with the younger generation, it forms a really good culture, because you have the young guys that are just go, 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 go nonstop. And then you have the older generation that's, hey, let's be responsible here. But in a sense, the younger generation is pushing the older generation to go, go, go. And the older generation is teaching the younger generation responsibility. You can't just go, go. You can go, go, but at a certain pace to doing things right and slow down, think about it, and the responsibility in life. I would say just give it a shot.
Yeah.
I would hire you.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. You heard it right from Steven. So, I mean, and that's what I've been telling people. I'm like, sometimes, you know, a change of scenery is good. And you'd be surprised what you might be able to do. I actually have a friend, true story. He is 80, and he just recently sold his HVAC company, but he still gets out there. He's like, man, I just love what I do. He gets out there 3 days a week and is still out there doing jobs. Sometimes it gets on a ladder, but for the most part, he's at that point now where he's just really overseeing a lot of things and just making sure things get done, because he's forgotten more than most young people know. But you bring up a good point. Now, I want to drive this home for our audience, is that, you know, when you see design firms and when you see construction firms hiring all these young people, it's important for them to have older folks there to balance it out and also to help those folks along. And because one of the things that I've been doing a lot of studying about this lately is that, especially for young men, so say you've got a bunch of young men that are 20 something, maybe 20, 21, 22, 23 on a construction site. You have to remember that even though those are adult men, the executive function part of their brain is still being formed. And that's important. And that's why it's so good to balance that out with some senior leadership that can kind of help these folks along. And so that's my little bit of encouragement to somebody listening to this that might be in their 40s or even early 50s. If you're healthy and you can get around and you've kind of been around the block a few times, this is a career. This is an industry that could use you, because you could bring some real value to the table and keep some of these young bucks, not just in line, but also encourage them, right? Because we, being the older folks, have to help this next generation to be the best version of themselves. They can't do it in a vacuum. They can't do it by themselves. So they need that input and they need that feedback. And so, and Steven needs help. So you need to be helping him out. So listen, before we land this plane, there's a couple more questions I want to ask. And I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to really kind of bear all as it pertains to iHaul. But the level of growth that you guys have experienced has been nothing short of amazing. You've had year over year growth of 150%. What's been, in your mind, the biggest driver of that momentum?
It's been faith. To be honest with you, it's been rooting not only yourself, but your company and the people that lead in your company to have a strong roots in their faith. I know, and I'll be the first one to say it, is I won't be sitting where I'm sitting today if it weren't for God. The doors that He has opened, the blessings that's come our way, has been incredible. And with that, you'll get the people on your path that becomes the connections to further your career or further your company or have an input or a positive impact in your company to propel you to the next level. I always go back, especially with the younger generation, is if I can give you a word of advice, is surround yourself with positive, motivated, and driven people. Because, you know, and there's an old saying that I always go back on, is I can tell you what your future is going to be by looking who you surround yourself. And that's what I think has driven us so much, especially in our growth, is with the people who we surround ourselves with. Setting clear goals, visions, and having those people in this company to drive those goals and those targets has been the force behind our growth year after year. And we installed that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. You guys are deeply engaged, iHaul is, in the community. And community is important to you. Clearly, I can hear it I heard it when we first spoke. You guys sponsor local sports teams. You support career education. Why is that important to you personally and to the company?
Well, from a personal perspective, it's important because I have kids, right? So I want my kids to be able to see different businesses, see how businesses are involved in day-to-day community activity, because it's those businesses that are built with people with good hearts. From a business perspective, it's showing up and giving us the tools to reach a wider stance of people when we have our logo on a sports team's shirt. But it's also making sure that that team is taken care of, whatever we needed to sponsor, whatever they needed for the tournament or for the year of the sport that's coming up. So that's always nice for us to see, or when we see the pictures of this team taking a group picture after season and winning a trophy or whatnot, or just participating, it's a proud moment for us to see, hey, we're part of that company. That team has represented that team.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I mean, I think it's just your company also, the people that work there also see that, right? There's that pride. It's like, oh, I work at IHOL. Oh, yeah, I saw that team. I just, you know, I saw that baseball team over at the park. And so definitely, I think there's some semblance of pride that comes along with seeing the brand that you work for out there in the community making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So this is my last question for you. And again, I appreciate the time that you've taken to spend with us today to kind of share some of your thoughts and feedback on the success that IHOL is experiencing right here in Northwest Arkansas. But looking ahead, what excites you the most about the future of your company, about the future of IHOL, not just here in Northwest Arkansas, but also beyond this area? Because I would imagine as you do continue to do amazing work, word about you will spread and people will be reaching out. And soon, I'm sure, if you're not already getting calls from Springfield, maybe calls from Tulsa, maybe calls from Kansas City and some of the other, you know, areas around us, you know, what is your hope for the future of this company?
The hope is that we continue to grow, but also grow on a steady pace where we grow the right way and be able to control that. You're right. I mean, Missouri, Tulsa, you know, River Valley, Kansas, it's becoming more of a reality that we're starting to look for those opportunities outside of Northwest Arkansas. Arkansas will always be our home base, but we also have to spread our wings and see what opportunities are out there. Texas is actually becoming a very big, it's actually top of the list right now to where we want to expand to. And it's not just because of the type of work that's in Texas, but it's also, there's a little bit more thought behind it with winter months over here. Just give you a quick hint, cold winters, wet winters in Arkansas might be better in Texas.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although the weather still is, if you compare it to like going north just 3 or 4 hours, it's a lot milder. And honestly, I don't know if the ground does freeze, right? In terms of, yeah. So that's the other benefit that you have is that when you get below a certain line and Fayetteville and Northwest Arkansas is actually below, just a little bit below that line, you do have some benefits that you don't have in northern parts of the U.S.
Yes, exactly. So it's definitely something we're looking into and we're excited about. And we're probably going to pursue this winter. We may be already in the works with it. So the future of IHOL is bright. We'll continue to grow. I look forward to meeting more people and connecting with people. You hear these people's stories. I mean, you build yourself, you build your character through meeting new people. And it's been an exceptional growth that what we've had so far and just a beautiful journey to be a part of. And I want that journey to continue and make new friends, make new connections, and continue seeing the people in this company and new people that will join to succeed in life and become better outside of the workplace or have a better life outside of this workplace, but also enjoy the work, being excited to wake up, to come to work.
Yeah. Well, that's almost like that, you know, that's when you've hit the lottery, when you actually enjoy what you do, so that whether you're at work or at home, you're like, you're living your best life.
Exactly. Like I say, the sandbox just got a whole lot bigger. So we're having a lot of fun. And
I love that.
It's fun times.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, Stephen, this has been great. If anybody listening to this is like, man, I just love this guy's energy. I love everything that he's doing here in Northwest Arkansas. I want to reach out to him. What's the best way for somebody to connect with you?
They can go straight to our website, ihall.com. The office email is on there. They can connect through that email. It will come straight to my desk, and we'll take it from there.
Okay. Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. So that's ihall.com. We'll make sure we put that in the show notes, and we'll have some other residual materials out for this particular podcast episode that people can take advantage of. If you're listening to this and you're thinking about a place to work, if you're a youngster in high school, I really want to encourage you to reach out to the folks at iHall, because there's some tremendous opportunities here, both now and in the future. And this would be a great firm to start out with and start working with. And who knows, you may get there and never want to leave, right? That's, I'm sure Steven's hoping for that. Oh. So that's
the goal. Or if somebody, you know, I've got a lot of friends too that, you know, if you just have a business question or you just want, I'd go for coffee. You know, I'll set a time out, and I love connecting with people, especially the next generation as well. Answering any question they have, whether I'm able to help or not, I'll try my best.
Well, folks, you heard it here. Steven is willing to get with you for coffee and to connect and chat. And listen, I'm telling you, we all need a sagely individual in our lives that can speak a word of encouragement, that can speak some guidance. And, you know, there's one of my favorite books says that there is always safety in numbers. And if you seek out good counsel, you will find success. And so I really want to encourage you to keep that in mind as you go about your business today. So, but Stephen, I want to thank you so much for joining me, Stephen Vandermeer, for the founder of iHall and somebody that's just out here in Northwest Arkansas doing some pretty amazing things. And just to think about where you've come from 11 years ago to this day, at the time of recording this, you know, at the middle of 2025, you've really made tremendous inroads. And I mean, you know, honestly, you are living the American dream. And so, man, I certainly applaud you. I encourage you to keep going, keep doing what you're doing and making a difference, because you're going to be able to really impact a lot of lives through the success of iHall. So thank you so much for joining us today on this podcast episode.
Randy, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit iamnorthwestarkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.